T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Some say it violates free speech. Some say social media companies are private and can do whatever they want. That may be true, but the fact is the user bases of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and others are in a lot of cases larger than some countries. Ian Schur is an editor-at-large at CNET. He's not surprised about the Trump social media bans, but thinks the decisions are coming a little bit too late. What was your initial reaction when you first saw that Donald Trump was going to be banned from Twitter and then the other social media platforms that followed?
My first reaction to all of that was that I was not surprised that it was happening, but I felt like it was something that was a little bit late to make this decision. There's been a lot of criticism of Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, you name them, over the way that they've handled harassment and hate campaigns and all of this type of stuff on their services, not the least of which President Donald Trump, who often violated their terms of service and would have been kicked off the platform much earlier if he wasn't president of the United States.
Is there any precedent for this sort of decision? I mean, how have these companies dealt with consistent hate speech in the past?
There isn't much of a precedent around this. And part of it is because of who we're talking about, right? We're talking about the president of the United States. There's only been a couple of them who have been alive during the internet. But I think what's been interesting has been that when it comes to hate speech and all of this type of stuff, the companies are constantly trying to figure out how to evolve on this stuff. You know, originally, the internet was very much a place where anything went, pretty much. As long as you didn't violate federal law, go have at it, do what you want. And over time, it has the line has been moving, the line in the sand, where they say enough is enough. So, you know, the last few years, we've seen terrorism become where it's no longer acceptable. So ISIS, for example, had a very large internet campaign to try and get people to be recruited to them. Well, Facebook and Twitter turned that off, essentially. They really kept it from being able to spread on their platforms. We've seen child exploitation. There's been so much successful battles against that. So now the new line we're getting to is real world harm, where if you're doing something online that can lead to real world harm, then not okay. You're going to get kicked off of these services. And that's an interesting new line to draw.
Yeah, it kind of seems to me that to this point, I mean, you mentioned a couple of different things where the companies have been successful in getting rid of bad actors. So it seems that they're kind of, as they go, things that pop up, we'll deal with it as they pop up. There's no real, you know, documentation in place, protocol in place.
The hard part about how these companies have been managing their services is that we've never dealt with these situations before. You have to keep in mind that the populations of these social networks, right? We're talking about over 2.7 billion people using Facebook every month. We're talking about more than 300 some odd million people using Twitter every month. We're talking about billions of hours of YouTube going up every day. I mean, it's unfathomable how much is going on. And the hard part is that when you think about it, they have only staffs of a couple thousand to deal with all these things. So it's nearly impossible to deal with any of it. I have argued many times on CNET that these companies also have ridiculous profits. When you look at Facebook, it had something like, I think it was $18 or $19 billion of profits last year. You look at Twitter, they are profitable now. Google, obviously one of the biggest companies in the world. Maybe they can have a little less and fight this stuff a little better. And I think that's where these companies are starting to realize that they need to put a lot more investment.
Specifically with these decisions with in regards to Donald Trump, what do you think the perspective of the companies was in making these decisions?
I don't think these companies wanted to deal with this issue at all. It was very clear from the beginning when President Trump was inaugurated. And I remember back then there was a lot of questions about whether he would continue using his Twitter account. He actually said he didn't know if he would. And then we learned very quickly that he was. But during that time, these companies basically didn't want to have to deal with this. And as he continued to break norms on the internet included, and to post things that would normally get people just kicked off of Twitter or Facebook. And by the way, people actually tried this. They would copy paste what he put in his Twitter stream and into their own accounts and get banned for it. That when that started to happen, the companies were like, okay, let's come up with some way to deal with this. And so they created this two-tier system where if you're a world leader, in quotations or whatever, then you get to have basically free reign of the platform. You get to do whatever you want. You can break all the rules, whatever. And if you're a normal person like Ian, you have to follow the rules. And it was very interesting because you ended up in a situation where the internet, in theory, is built as a place where it's the place where the voiceless have a voice, right? Where everyone has equal say. And the reality was we were repeating what was going on in the real world, that the most powerful have the most power even here. And I think it's something that the internet companies have increasingly realized that they can't turn a blind eye to anymore. And they need to really confront these issues, because it's not just President Trump who's a problem here. There are many world leaders who use the internet in very dangerous ways, and we need to deal with that.
One of the things I heard when the ban started coming down is people, you know, on one side of it were about free speech. People on the other side seemed to be saying, well, they're not a public company. It's a private company. They can do whatever they want. Can you explain what that means, a public company? Because oftentimes a lot of the things, you know, most of the things that are on these websites are very public, you know, but
yes.
So what makes them private, and how does that play in here?
So the when you think of a private company and a public company and all that type of stuff, these terms are generally kind of insidery terms. So it's hard to remember what they all mean. A private company means essentially that it is not connected to the government. So and that means that they are not following the same laws that the government has to follow for itself, which is a very interesting kind of concept. You also have in the finance world, a public company is a company that is owned by a lot of people, and a private company is owned by very few people. So you have to remember the context has a lot to do with it. But in this case, when we're talking about, hey, you know, Facebook is a company that can do whatever it wants, right? You're essentially making the point that the First Amendment, when the way it's written, it says that the government shall not, and that means that even though we have all of these protections for what we say and what we do and protest and all of this, it actually only extends to how the government enforces it. When it comes to companies like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, they don't have to follow the First Amendment. They can do whatever they want. And, you know, on some level, this makes sense, right? That if you can't force a company to suddenly have, you know, certain content on their platforms, right? You can't go to Macy's and say, you must sell this T-shirt, right? And so in the same case, what's going on with Facebook and YouTube and Twitter is that they are trying to figure out the rules should be, because they already don't allow terrorist content. They don't allow child exploitation. Now they are trying to figure out what the other rules should be. But in those cases, like if I'm a terrorist and I'm in the United States, I can hold a rally as long as I don't hurt someone. And that's not something that they allow on Facebook or Twitter.
You pose a potential solution to all of this. I read one of your recent pieces where you talk about something you like to call NetMod, which I found interesting. This body of people funded by the companies that can make decisions like this. So just break that down for me. Explain exactly what this would be.
One of my biggest frustrations with this whole situation is that nobody really seems to have come up with very many answers for how to handle it. You know, you look at Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, and they say, well, we support regulation. They've gotten to that point where the CEOs say, well, we'll support something, but they don't propose very many ideas. And then on the other end, you've got the, you know, you have President Trump, who wanted to kind of the nuclear option, right, to take away a lot of their legal protections for what people post on their web, on their website. So effectively, if something slanderous or libelous is said or posted on those services, then I could sue Google, Twitter, or Facebook, as well as the person who actually posted it. You can't do that today. They essentially have legal protections. So what I feel like needed to happen was, you know, there needed to be some sort of an idea for how to handle this. And what I thought was very interesting was that Facebook is already starting down the path of saying, we're going to give some of the power that we used to just have for Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO, to other people and outside of Facebook. So they have this Supreme Court of Facebook they've started up, which, you know, they call the Oversight Board, which is a very boring name. But what they essentially is that it's 20 people from across different industries who actually weigh in on some of the most controversial decisions that Facebook has made around moderation. So in fact, banning Donald Trump from their service is now going up before that group of people, and they will actually have a chance to override Mark Zuckerberg and to decide, well, you know, he was wrong. I feel like the next step needs to be that all moderation needs to be removed from Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. It is very clear to me that they are just terrible at what they've done, right? I mean, look at the state we're all in. And that these types of decisions need to be made by someone who isn't driven by profit motive and isn't driven by the internal politics of these companies. And, you know, you can say, well, they're trying to do their best. Sure. Well, they failed. So I would think that, you know, they all have billions of dollars in profits. They can afford to spend a little bit of it to give to an independent organization, non-governmental, that would effectively do all of this moderation for them. And eventually what we would have is a justice system essentially for the internet, which is effectively what we need at this point, right? We know that in the United States, justice system works pretty okay, right? It's the best idea we have so far. And, you know, despite its flaws, it's done its job. And I think that a very similar approach needs to now be done for the internet, because the Wild West doesn't work, right? Here we are in a place where, you know, it led to, in a very short amount of time, right? Only a couple of years, a conspiracy theory that led, you know, thousands of people to attack the Capitol. And now we have six people dead, including two Capitol police officers. And it's just, it's unacceptable. We can do better. And I think that is one way we could do it.
You mentioned non-governmental. So the government can impeach a president, but why do you think a government shouldn't be able to play a role in this?
there's a couple of reasons I feel like the government would be a very bad part of this whole thing. One of them is, in fact, the First Amendment. The government has already very strong restrictions on what it can decide around free speech. But also, I feel like part of the problem here is that the internet is much larger than any government. I mean, Facebook, 2.7 billion people using it every month. There is no country on earth that's that large, right? And if you think about all the different ways that the internet just is completely different from any modern country, it doesn't work if you have a government in charge. So that's part of it. There are ways the government can help, though. One of the things I think that would be actually very good, and something that is a bipartisan idea already, so I'm on a good part of the curve, is actually amending the Communications Decency Act, something that President Trump was talking about, to essentially tell these companies, look, if you don't meaningfully moderate your platforms, you lose all of your legal protections. So it would set up a situation where they would have to use these independent moderation groups that I'm suggesting to actually fix the problems for them, because otherwise they could be sued, which would be, I think, the only way to force them to do anything. And it would also lead to a situation where we have companies like Parler, or Parlay, if you say it because it's Latin, they didn't have much moderation that they did. That's part of why Apple and Google kicked them off the App Store. Well, in my world, if we followed this idea and we amended Section 230, the Communications Decency Act, to say, if you don't moderate your platform, then you could be sued for, and you're liable for what people post, they would naturally be forced to moderate their platforms, or they would be sued into oblivion already. So that's part of why I think these things actually work really well, is that, in fact, we take power away from Apple and Google and Facebook and Twitter. We hand it to at least a group of people that's independent from all of it and the government, and on some level try to fix this instead of just saying, hey, let's be the Wild West, or hey, let's lock it down completely, neither of which any of us want.
You mentioned earlier, the separating of the rules for, people, world leaders versus private citizens. It's pretty easy to spot when a world leader says something, anything, whether it's good or bad. It's a lot harder to spot the private citizen. So, would this, how would a net mod group be able to do this when you've got, like you said, billions and billions of people?
It's impossible to actually track what's online. And this is just reality, right? That you talk about all of those active people on Facebook. They're posting at a ridiculous rate. The amount of video going up on YouTube every second as we're talking is unimaginable. So it's impossible to track all this stuff. Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube have said that they're investing in artificial intelligence, which is a fancy way of saying computer programs that can actually automatically detect this stuff. And by the way, we already have some of it that works really well. The way that they fight child exploitation is through these artificial intelligence programs. And there's a reason you see very little of it, if at all, on Facebook. It's because those programs work. But the problem they have, and the reason I think that they cannot make these decisions when it comes to moderation of these issues, these larger issues, I mean, is that when it comes to, we talk about neo-Nazism, we talk about Holocaust denial, we talk about conspiracy theory. These programs could be unleashed on them, but you would have vast swaths of people just completely banned from these platforms, because we now know that millions of people actually believe the QAnon conspiracy theory. We know that millions of people are supportive, at least on some level, of what right-wing extremism wants to do. And in those cases, they would all effectively get banned from these platforms very quickly if we just unleashed these computer programs on them in the same way we do with child exploitation. So using an external organization would at least allow us to come up with these rules in a way that seems more fair, right? And maybe the end result is that we ban QAnon from the internet. I personally would not be bothered by that. And I think, you know, I could sleep pretty well at night if neo-Nazis were banned from the internet as well. But I don't want to be the one making that call. I think we should do it as a group. And that is why, at least on some level, we can do that. But it's impossible to monitor everything. And there will always be bad stuff on the internet. Yes. But on some level, at least if we can control how it spreads on the most influential, powerful platforms in the world, that's a start on some level.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I just wonder.
And if you don't mind me bringing up one other thing,
sure.
If you don't mind.
Absolutely.
I feel like I'm rambling a lot.
No,
so
not at
you
all.
Tell me when I'm. One of the other really important things to keep in mind, and this goes to the whole how Facebook has failed us all, is that a few years ago, the United Nations decided to start researching and looking into how the genocide in Myanmar played out and how much of an impact the internet had. Because it was very interesting. And if you don't know the history of the genocide in Myanmar, we, of course, have a story on CNET about it. Because one of the things that was very interesting about it was that the way it was driven was through the internet. You know, if you think of the Hotel Rwanda, right, and everything that happened decades ago, that was driven in large part by stuff said on radio. Well, now this UN report found that Facebook played a, quote, determining role in the genocide. So let's put that in simple terms. Facebook played a role in the genocide. It was actually used as a tool of it. And you have to keep in, like, it is unbelievable that this company allowed this effectively to happen, that they were used as a tool to kill people, thousands of people, tens of thousands of people. And I think that that's a wake-up call, that the power of these platforms needs to be recognized, and that how to handle that power needs to be changed. Because whatever we do in the future, right, we could do what I propose, we could do what other people propose, but whatever we do, we know that what we're doing right now has led to genocide. So let's do something different.
CNET Editor-at-Large Ian Sherp, thanks for the time.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.